listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and I'm with my friend Neil.
Hello.
And I've known Neil for quite a long time. Neil says that I am the first friend he ever knew, or the first friend your mother ever met, or...
According to my mom, one day in the park, I guess you were throwing sand at me. And
was he really throwing sand at you?
No, but it's funnier that way. And okay. Then we became best friends. My mother still talks about it to this day. I say, hey, I'm going to go hang out with Brandon. She goes, oh, let me tell you the story about when you two were in the sandbox and Brandon was throwing sand at you, but not really.
We grew up in a town called Westchester, which is about 10 minutes outside of Chicago in a car. We're directly west. We were directly west of the city. And we were talking about this earlier. We went to a Catholic school. And for the longest time, I thought the only people in the world were Catholic people, though I was not Catholic myself. Which, if you think about it, is quite odd.
You were a renegade.
I was a renegade. My mother put me in Catholic school because she didn't want me to go to public school for reasons I don't understand to this day.
Yeah, didn't you grow up like around... You grew up next to a public school.
Next to a public school. Remember the scene in High Fidelity where Cusack is outside of the... you're rubbing your head like I shouldn't bring this up. Where he calls his therapist and he's like, I'm at home. He's like, okay. He's like, it's a convenience store. And that... And then it blows up. And that's how I feel because now where I grew up is part of the Westchester Public School District.
Yeah. They really did take over that entire area. And yeah. It looks terrible now, by the way. The bushes? Come
yeah.
on.
Well, yeah. We used to play baseball, like, every day.
And hockey.
And we played hockey when it was cold and baseball when it was warm every day. We were All-American kids, man.
Those were formative years.
Those were highly formative years. Speaking of formative years, I think us playing baseball every day led you to play college baseball.
Yeah, a little bit. I want to say that one of my great motivating goals when I was younger, you know, because everybody has their thing. How many times can you, grab a girl's pigtails or slap somebody in the face or play bloody knuckles and win? And my big thing was, how many times can I hit a tennis ball into Brandon's backyard over the 30-foot giant trees that he had back there?
And it was quite often, actually.
Well, yeah, every now and then.
But oh, don't be modest.
You weren't too bad yourself, line drive hitter.
Compared to you and our friend Dave, I was shit. Dave went on to play baseball at a competing high school, the one I went to, and you stuck out at an all-boys school.
What's that supposed to mean? What kind of sexual overtones are those?
I think the competition was tougher. You had more reason to be angry because you didn't get to see girls every day.
Yeah, well, that really didn't bother me too much because I was always focused on my studies anyway. I was one of those late bloomers
with girls. You're such a liar. Are you kidding me?
You're right.
You are a lying man. Anyways, you played baseball and you were drafted twice. Is this true or false?
True, but false. I was supposed to be drafted twice on when I came out of high school, and I said no both times.
Go into this more, because this is a dream for a lot of people, but not for you, obviously.
Well, it was and it wasn't, because when I was younger, I would, you always dream about going and playing in baseball, et cetera, et cetera. But as I got older, I started to figure out that I really just wanted to continue my education, and that was the biggest thing with me. I mean, when they called draft day, they said, all right, we're going to draft you in such and such a
round.
Wait,
what year is this?
2001.
This is 2001, so you would we graduated in high school in 2001.
Yeah, so this is June of my senior year, after school's out, and they...
So, like, you just graduated, like, a week prior or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
And they called me, and they said, all right, we're going to take you. And I go,
Who's we?
That was the... Pittsburgh Pirates.
The Pittsburgh Pirates called you, and what round were they going to take you? For those of you that don't know, correct me if I'm wrong here, Neil, there's 30 rounds.
50.
There's 50 rounds. Okay, 50 rounds. There's 30 teams.
Yeah.
So that's 2,500 players getting drafted.
Yeah, 2,500 in every year, 2,500 out every year.
Okay, so you were going to be one of 2,500 in what round?
It was the 18th,
in the 18th. That's pretty high, relatively, considering.
Yeah, for a guy who... really didn't have any coaching. Yeah.
Ooh, okay. Why do you say you never had any coaching?
Well, my coach never played baseball, and he admitted.
Wait, your high school coach?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That makes
kind of cool.
That makes me think I should go teach high school baseball.
Yeah, because you could have profound effects on people all throughout your career.
Jesus. Okay. So you decided no to the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yes.
Did they ever draft you, or did you say no before they got to draft you?
I said no before they drafted
me. So you saved them a pick, so they weren't mad at you.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
Okay, so what happened the second time?
About an hour and a half later, the Montreal Expos called.
You could have played it in the Nationals, man.
Yeah, I know.
You could have lived the dream. You actually would have made that team.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. They got some talent there and some guys that do some pretty nasty things that they got rid of. But no, they called me, said the same thing, and I said the same thing to them. And I still to this day don't know why I said it, but I said it. And I went to college, and it was quite an experience. And you know, I was just reading today. I went and played college baseball, and there was a guy who's a couple years older than me.
Okay.
Who's now a F-16 pilot. And I only met him in passing once, but he had this really profound statement because he was drafted, and he said that playing college baseball was the best 4 years of his entire life because he had so much fun with the camaraderie and working toward a championship because it was a goal.
Okay.
And it was a huge team goal, and everybody was rallying around that. And he said pro baseball was more cutthroat. I'm going after it. Get out of my way. And guys were not friends at all. So,
okay, how was he? You played for Purdue for five. You were a five-year red shirt guy. Right. Didn't you get hurt?
No, I walked onto the team when I was a freshman, and they didn't have a spot for me. So then I showed up next year, and they kept me going.
Okay, but you were good enough, obviously, to play 4 years.
Yeah, I guess.
Did you feel that camaraderie? Was your 4 years of or 5 years of college baseball the best time of your life?
I don't know what best is, but yeah, it was pretty good.
Tell me. It was pretty good.
It was really good, actually. I mean, I had a lot of fun, and the best part about that time was not necessarily the fact that I made, you know, friends that I still have today and guys that I'll call across the country, which I think was the best part about going away to college. I mean, I met people from, you know, New Brunswick, Canada. If there is a New Brunswick, Canada.
Let's not look it up and say there is.
Fair enough. We'll iPhone it later. that was great. And that was really wonderful for me because I just wanted to get away. And I met all these wonderful people. And it really was because, I don't know. When I went there, I felt like a small fish in a big pond. Because I had been at a high school with basically 300 people, and then as soon as you hit
your graduating class or total?
Total.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, 350 to 400 max.
Wow.
Now I think it's more at like 800 to 900, but still 350 to 40,000 in 1 year is a huge jump.
I can imagine. I think I saw you once your first year at Purdue. How were you doing then?
Oh, it was good.
You adjusted to the big city type of feel, college feel or whatever?
Yeah, it's a big city feel in a small town area. So
there's actually hills around Purdue. I've been a few times.
I know, scary.
It's weird.
It's in a river valley in Indiana.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Indiana, which is probably the best part about it.
Yes, rolling hills, green lush trees and countryside, floods all the time, a couple of golf courses that are constantly underwater in the winter. But no, it's really nice.
Okay, so you're glad you went there?
Yes, I am.
Are you glad you were a walk-on?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter to me. The whole scholarship thing is kind of overblown, I tend to think.
What do you mean?
It's overrated because you get guys who, this is even with the draft too. Guys get drafted 2,500 go in every year, 2,500 go out. So when people use that as a status thing, and that's the big thing about baseball players.
Continue.
It's a status game. It always is. It's what can I do better than you? It's a consistent contest of masculinity.
Okay.
So when they say you got drafted in the sixth round, well, the guy that got drafted in the fifth round that'll probably blow out his shoulder within a year is considered better than you forever.
And really?
You'll always be known as a seventh round pick or a sixth round pick as long as you live.
Well, okay. I didn't think of that because I obviously have no idea what the hell I'm talking about here. I've never played college ball. I've been interested in baseball my whole life, but obviously
it's not
never.
Just college, it's high school too. I mean, you can get a kid who's 18, throws 97, they'll draft him in the top 3 to 5 rounds. And this was a couple years ago before they really started finding out high schoolers, well, I don't know if they have maturity, but a majority of them would go in, be overpitched from high school, and then they'd fizzle out for a year or two, and then they'd come back and years and years and years down the line. But that's not a big deal. It's really just, I don't know, how do you say it? It's the status. So if a high schooler gets drafted before a guy who's 23, who's been spending his entire career in college, does that 23-year-old feel slighted because the 18-year-old got drafted years before him?
Well, from someone that could have been drafted at 18, what do you think?
And you think about it that way. What could I have been?
Yeah, but you knew what you could have been. You knew your talent. Nah. Do you think you ever would have made it?
I don't know. I've had this.
Did you think about it a lot?
I've had this debate before, and I always said in college when I was having tough times that I'm not a baseball player, and when I was having good times, I'd say, wow, I can do anything I want. But I think that's the nature of sports in general.
That you can do anything you want?
Yeah, I was very, what's the word, exogenic, I don't know.
I don't know the word. And I was an English major, for Christ's sake.
I don't know. I think I'm applying that word from kidneys. But it's like you give everything of yourself to one cause, and okay. then you base all your results on what happens, instead of just internalizing all of the success that you've had
okay.
and saying, yeah, you know what? That's a good thing. No matter what happens, I've done this. And but, it took me a long time to figure that out.
But you're talking just in one thing. Like, you're talking about just baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like if you did go, that would have been the end of your career. Let's say you played 4 years in the minor, you played two half seasons in the majors, and then you were done. That right. wouldn't be your whole life, though.
For some people, it is.
Well, I mean, I know for a lot of yeah. people it is, but you're not an idiot, unlike most people that are drafted at 18.
Yeah, somebody once told me that. They saw me after I graduated from college, and they said, oh, man, you should have gotten drafted. And they said, yeah, but you never would have made it. And I looked at them, and I said, what
okay,
are you
by the way, I'm
about?
Not trying to insult you. This is what you said to me at previous times. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying trying to say you couldn't have played 20 years as a right fielder. I'm saying what you told me. You said, when we first talked about this, when I found out that you were drafted, that you thought you wouldn't have played maybe 4 or 5 years in the minors, maybe got called up a few times, but overall you figured you would never have been, like, the guy.
Yeah, I assumed that from the beginning, and I don't know if that's just who I am or what I think of myself.
Well, okay, what do you think it is?
I don't know. Maybe it's because I saw a lot of talent around me, and I knew that where you were, and it's kind of funny because if you think about it in terms of who you know,
mm-hmm.
baseball is a lot of who you know.
Really?
And I don't, and I didn't know anybody. I was greener than green, if you want to use the
Purdue Well, then how
terms.
Did they find out about you? If they,
I don't know.
I mean,
I really don't know. They
you
just
never found that
me.
Out to this day?
Never found that out.
You never knew when scouts were at your games or anything?
No, I knew they were there because, you know, the other guys on the team would be like, oh, the scouts are here, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you just kind of shrug it off.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. I don't really care about what other people are thinking about me all the time. Unless it's a really hot barista.
We just had coffee. That's probably why you're thinking of baristas and not bartenders. Anyways, I think the reason why you have this outlook on baseball is your father and your mother. Because I remember when we played Little League, I don't know if we were on the same team. I'm sure we were at one point. You were always one of the best players on the team. And all the coaches, and I think one example that wasn't this, but all the coaches' kids weren't good. They were mediocre to bad. And mm-hmm. they were the parents that always yelled at their kids and always wanted to do more. But your parents never did that.
Yeah, they're kind of weird.
Yeah, they were like supremely supportive of you, but never told you how to do anything.
Yeah, I never understood that either. I actually, my dad, who used to tell me all these stories, but he would always like leave out all the details, and my mom would bring up the details because I guess my dad was pretty good at football.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, and he just never continued for some reason, and she couldn't figure it out either, but they would tell stories and this and this and that, and my dad would say, yeah, well, you know, I played baseball for a while, and I just didn't get it, and I quit.
Is that how you did it?
And I guess, yeah, it's kind of strange. But he never would say, this is how you do this, or this is how you do this. He would always say, okay, cool, sounds like a good idea. And he was just happy with what I was telling him. It was his way of, you know, sort of connecting, I guess. And
okay.
even today, I mean, we have strange conversations about finances because that's my, like, pet interest, economics or whatever. And then he'll talk to me about baseball, and we'll go back and forth. And it's always about what we should be doing or how the Cubs or Sox put together a team financially. Uh-huh. And
so more the GM role and not the coach role.
Yeah, the GM role or coach role, but my dad will still sit watching games and scream and scream, and he'll just walk out of the room.
Do you do that?
No, I hate watching baseball.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Live.
Live is different. Now, live is different. I'll sit there and watch a game, and I'll enjoy it. But
why?
I think it's atmosphere more than anything
okay.
else. I like sitting down and watching. And at a certain height, I kind of get bored.
What do you mean? Like if you're in the 500 level, or do you mean like...
Yeah, 500 level. I like to be... I don't know. It must be from the playing days, when I like to be in the game field level,
uh-huh.
watching what's going on, saying, you know, I used to do that too. It's
yeah.
kind of neat.
Do you find that most baseball players are dumb?
Hmm.
And when I say most, I mean college level and minor league level.
Define dumb. I mean, if you're talking IQ, I've met some brilliant...
Not IQ, because IQ doesn't really mean much. I don't know, well-read?
No.
They're not well-read?
Not a
okay,
lot of well-read guys.
Maybe that's just some prejudice that I have.
That's
or
fine.
Something.
Hate
but
on them.
I'm not trying to hate on anybody. Okay, here's what I mean. If they didn't play baseball, they would have a relatively successful life using their mind.
Two out of every seven.
Okay, so no. Overall, no.
Yeah. When I was at Purdue, I met some very credible individuals who had some intelligence in them, and we're not talking street smarts, but they were book smart.
Yeah. But that's a little different, though, because obviously those are the people that chose to go to college.
Yes.
And not just straight from high school.
Yes.
So maybe you have a biased point of view there. I mean...
That's true. And a lot of them, and that's the thing, too. The guys that I met in college for baseball, a lot of them, you're right, weren't drafted, but, you know, colleges like them, mm-hmm. and they brought them on for academics plus baseball.
Yeah.
And that's important for a lot of guys because that's the whole dream of getting into it based on doing well in school and, you know, hooking up with that thing.
Going back to the school and baseball thing, do you think the whole Moneyball type of baseball has changed that? Because like you were saying before, it's like the guy in the sixth round versus the guy in the seventh round. The guy in the sixth round is going to always have the sixth round versus the seventh round. Mm-hmm. But that book and the way that those GMs pick up players, it's not necessarily like that. They're more inclined to go to the college guy.
Yeah,
that's been drafted like 10 times. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's true. There have been some really talented guys that have stuck it out to get more and more money because they know they can.
Yeah.
There were a couple guys who we played against in the Big Ten who had been drafted 2, 3, 4 times, and we sit there and we go, gee whiz. And we would always razz them. It's kind of funny because we'd yell 18th round.
Did you really? When
we busted 6 or 7 runs.
Even though you were drafted in the 18th round.
I never said that. I actually never told anybody that.
Really? So none of your teammates knew about this?
No, none of them.
Wow. That's surprising.
I don't like the bragging game.
I don't think it's a bragging game.
The male locker room mentality.
Okay,
is,
I could see
I'm
that.
I'm above you. You're above me. And... at my size in that locker room, I would just stand there and look, and the conversation would usually end pretty quickly.
Because you're so big, or because you're so small? I mean, I don't get it.
It's because I have an evil eyebrow.
Well, what are you, like 6'4"?
6'5".
You're 6'5". You're a big guy, but you're not fat in the least. You're, like, in shape and stuff.
That's because I don't eat all the time.
But how would you stack up to these guys playing, like, in terms of size? Were you, like, a runt, or were you normal, or were you big?
I was above average and still am above average. If you match up with Major League Baseball players are freaks, let's put it that way. If a guy who's 6'6", 325 can throw the ball 97 miles an hour and run at a pace that's unheard of, he's a freak. He's an athlete. I'd probably stack up as an average major league outfielder size or just slightly above average.
Do you think if you would have been, let's say you're in the 80s and baseball wasn't like it is now, do you think you probably could have had like a long-term, like, not bench rider career, but like consistent like utility player or like a consistent, like you'd be the center fielder for 10 years on the Pirates instead of now?
I don't know. That's a tough question because they always say that there are different eras of baseball and the guys who play now would have dominated years and years ago. And I think that's true to some degree, but would I have made it? I have no idea. Because there were less teams back then, too. And there was a smaller minor league system.
Yeah, and most of the guys came from America, too. So.
Yes.
And you came from America.
the United States of America.
Well, in this room, there's only one. The Obama America. I should just call out my political allegiances. That's no good.
That's okay.
If it didn't show that we're from Chicago anyways.
It's a podcast.
All right, exactly. It's the most important casting of all. So we've been talking about this for 19 minutes, give or take, and this is the most I've ever talked to you about this.
Cool.
And I've known you for this long. It's kind of weird. Anyways, you didn't want to play baseball because, well, not didn't want to play, but you didn't want to go to the major leagues. You didn't, and you're very interested in education, and now you're in grad school.
Yes.
What are you going to grad school for?
Right now, it's administration, supervision, and I'm going to add English to that mix as soon as I convince the people in the registrar's office that all I'm doing is giving them my money.
So, okay, what does administration get you? Like, when you go for an MBA, you go into business and you get a higher position. What is administration?
Administration gives you the ability to then take the Type 75, which then gets you, one, a paycheck raise, which for many people in today's education world is all they go for.
Okay.
The Type 75, a lot of them, and I can't remember the numbers, but it was some inordinate amount of people getting their Type 75 but never using it ever.
But what is a Type 75?
Type 75 guarantees you a position of administration. So if you wanted to become an assistant principal, a dean of students, a principal, superintendent, et cetera, that's your step one.
Is that why you're going?
I have no idea. I used to think that I wanted to be a superintendent or some other high-ranking official. And in my wildest dreams, I still say, wow, superintendent. Their job is so volatile that people don't even want to do it anymore. And sometimes you're in a district for a year and then they fire you immediately. And a lot of me says, I want to do that. But as I teach more and more, I find that that's what I really love. I love teaching. I love goofing around. I love having that, yeah, I get that moment.
You want to teach what level?
I don't know yet.
You're not sure. Well, I'm guessing you don't want to teach like early childhood or something.
Not yet, no.
You'd be interested in that though.
Yeah. Really what I'm interested in, a friend of mine was telling me this story about his father who teaches alternative classes at night in a school district.
Okay.
One classroom, one teacher, seven aides, two cops, 12 students.
Wow, that sounds fun.
It does.
Where's it at? Chicago?
I don't remember where, but just the ratio of people to support was interesting enough.
And okay, you just mentioned that you were thinking about going for English as well.
Yes.
What's the point of that?
I don't know. I just love the spoken word. I'm in one of those places right now where it doesn't really matter where I go, just as matter that I'm going and I'm doing the right thing as far as my mind says is correct.
Okay. So you're just going essentially for intellectual stimulus.
At this point, yes.
Couldn't you have done that with reading a book?
Yes. I agree.
You don't regret going to grad school, do you?
Not a bit.
Good.
And you know what's funny you say that? Because I do a lot of reading on my own for other... And I just pull books out of the library for other grad, you know, master's programs. And I find that it does the exact same thing. And I actually read books from other classes as opposed to my books much more often because that's my choice.
Okay.
And I think that's what's great about the library and why it's not utilized enough. They should just say as a teacher or an administrator for a program, you have to spend X amount of hours in the library. I don't care what you read, but it's got to be in this genre. So grab five books and then you evaluate them for me. Either that or I just have a problem with prescribed authority, which is ironic, I guess.
Well, it's quite ironic, but it makes complete sense of why you'd want to go into it.
Yeah, because I don't like it. Exactly. I think I can do it better. Which means I'm a man.
Which also means that you have a lot of problems with your professors.
Yes, I do.
You just told me
I won't name them.
Of course not. You just told me about a paper you wrote, and it was about a book. Is this right?
Yeah.
And the whole point of the paper was saying that this book shouldn't have been taught in class.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you do that?
One, because I think that the professor wasn't really going to grade it. So,
what do you mean? Do you think they were just going to give it what you've gotten on it before, or...?
No, they were just going to hand it back with a grade 1 point below perfect.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen that happen
but
before.
But that did not happen this time.
It didn't happen this time. But there was only one comment on the page, I disagree. And then I got, I don't know, not a
That's
perfect
hilarious.
Score. It's funny.
Well, yes, it's funny to you.
And it's funny to her, too.
Are you sure?
I don't know.
No, you don't know, friend. You don't know.
You're right. Okay. I got an A on the next one, though.
So you're going to get an A regardless, even though you just ripped on her whole profession.
Yeah, I know. It's not good.
Okay, so
stop that.
You just started grad school in the fall, is this right?
Last fall, yeah. I'm a year in.
You're a year in. How long is the program? 3 years? 4 years?
About a year and a half to 2 years, depending upon pace.
And you're going part-time, full-time?
I think it's considered part-time.
How many classes are you in?
Two right now.
That's part-time.
Yeah. Full-time would be four.
Yep.
And I don't know how these people do it. I think
are they working full time?
Yeah, they do. I think it's because...
Do they have an easy job?
I don't know. I don't tend to talk to them about that. I think it's more to do with distance.
Okay.
So they live, you know, one of them actually worked down the block.
Yeah.
One of them worked 2 miles away. One of them worked an L stop and a transfer bus away. So it was easier for them to get
And
there.
You don't live close. You actually just moved.
Yeah.
You moved from Westchester to Oak Park, where I used to live.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good neighbor.
Why'd you move to Oak Park and not Chicago?
I was looking in Chicago for a long time, and I thought that buying in Chicago would be better than renting in Chicago.
Okay.
And it turned out to work that way because I kept looking for places to rent, and I didn't see anything I liked. And then one day I was looking online and saw a place that really fit me, had a lot of age to the building, was in a centralized location considering the L.
Yeah, you're like a block from the L, literally.
Yeah, I can spit out my window and just miss.
Yeah.
Which is cool for me.
But I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. You live above a coffee shop.
Just outside of a coffee shop.
You never sleep either.
I know.
How many hours of sleep do you get?
Average.
Not weekend. This is work week average.
Okay.
I know you wake up way too early.
Yeah, that's a big problem, and it's getting worse. I'm turning into my grandfather, who used to be a milkman.
Really?
Yeah, he used to keep strange hours, too. But I woke up average this week at 3:45.
Oh, my God.
For no reason. Just up.
And what time do you go to bed?
About 11:30, midnight, 1, somewhere in there.
So you're getting like 4 hours of sleep a night.
Yeah, sometimes I get 6.
And you're functioning.
Yeah, pretty somehow. Well, too.
You're driving.
Efficiently.
Why? Have you always had problems with sleep?
Because if I don't drive efficiently, I'll run into something.
That's fair, but have you always had problems sleeping?
No.
This is new?
No. This isn't a problem.
This is a problem, sir.
Do I need to grow anymore?
No, you don't need to grow anymore, but isn't this bad for your health or something?
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe it's a social experiment.
It's an accidental, unwillingly social experiment?
No, it's on purpose because I do have I have a lot to do. Teaching is a huge, huge commitment, a lot bigger than I ever thought it would be. In grad school, is it more of a commitment, bigger than I ever thought it would be. And I like it. I like to keep myself busy.
Do you have a girlfriend?
No.
Do you think that this might be the reason why you don't have a girlfriend?
Yes, because I'm married to grading papers in
yeah,
my pen.
Yeah, I'm serious.
Yeah.
How old are you?
Old enough.
No.
Know.
Do you 25. Know what I'm saying? You're 25. You're young. You're a young chicken. You've been chicken. Teaching for, I don't know why. We're all chickens.
Here's a little chicken.
What are you, your third year teaching?
Third and a half.
And you still enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're in your like first/second year grad school.
Mm-hmm.
You still enjoy that relatively?
Yeah. And you know what? That's the best part. I mean, I've had great classes, fantastic classes.
Yeah.
And then you have the classes where you sit there and say, this is ridiculous. It's yeah. just like anything else. But what I really enjoy is the social interaction with everybody else in the room because everybody's in the same boat and I don't get to interact with teachers. And this is kind of strange. In a school, you don't interact with teachers as much as you think because... You're working the whole time.
Yeah.
And if you're not working the whole time, then I'm not going to pass judgment.
You're very nice. It's very good. So what's the goal? What's the goal of grad school?
The goal of grad school is to read enough and push enough paper so that I do really well and gain a lot of knowledge and then move on and make more money someday.
Move on to what?
I don't know yet, but at least a position of knowledgeable power and authority.
What's that?
I don't know either. That's a lot of big fancy words.
In your ideal world, what are you doing?
Solving problems.
Like a mystery? Like the Cosby mysteries?
No, not Cosby mysteries so much. I don't know who. I don't
Monk?
Know.
House?
Monk? No. I like House,
House
though.
Is very
House
good.
House is great.
You know what it's based on, right?
Sherlock Holmes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Arthur Conan Doyle is one of my favorites.
I heard he was a dick.
Was he?
I heard.
He's a heck of a writer.
I don't know, though. I don't
Hound
know
of the Baskerville is one of my favorites, but not nearly as much fun as the Red-Headed League.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. I've never read any of it.
Really?
I've never read any Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. No. And I just slur that all together.
Sir
Arthur Conan Doyle.
Bananas.
For three words there, there's not that many syllables, but it looks and sounds like there is. There's not. There's only seven.
Yeah, like Will Bob.
Like Will Bob, yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Neither do I.
That's good. Okay, so I'm going to close this up. Where's my book? There it is. Okay. This is from the Kids Book of Questions by Gregory Stock, PhD. You're going to have to pick a number between 1 and 260.
33.
Smashing Pumpkins reference. Was it on accident or on purpose?
Purposeful.
You're looking at two guitars behind my head. They're playing tonight, actually.
Oh, is that one of the series of sold out shows?
Tonight, I think it's show 2 of 4 or 4 of 4. I don't remember. Oh, crap. Yeah.
There was a great article. And I'm, you know what? As much as Jimmy Chamberlain was sort of, you know, pushed off the deep end for years,
yeah,
he's really come back and he and Corgan must get along really well.
They're very, very good friends. I actually went to see Jimmy Chamberlain's. He released a solo project, the Jimmy Chamberlain Project.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that?
I never heard it. No?
I'm not a fan, but I took my drummer to see the show at the Double Door. He loved it because it was really, really drum heavy, and the drums itself are really good. And Corgan came on stage and sang a song I don't know her. So, yeah, they're still very tight.
Wow.
And he's still one of the best drummers. He's crazy big too, man. He's like 5'4", really short dude. And his biceps are like the size, like bigger than my thighs. And his thighs are like two of my thighs. And I'm a big dude.
Yeah.
It's crazy big.
Well, I don't know why drummers, I mean, the movements, but their forearms get enormously, yeah. And they get ripped too.
They do.
I mean, they don't need to work out at all.
I'm sure this guy does though, because if you look at like, this was what, 2004, 2003? Look at that to the Melancholy era. He just got in shape. It was crazy. So
Melancholy might be one of my favorite albums.
Oh yeah, Doubles. I wanted to talk about this. We grew up in the same town, like I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. We had, I would say, very little culture in terms of the arts.
Yeah, there was not a big arts push. I mean, we had arts that were present in Chicago, but that's a commute away.
Yeah, and at 10 years old, it's not very easy to get to Chicago, even though we were a bus ride away.
Yeah.
Anyways, you grew up, I grew up loving Nirvana, like On My Sleeve, wore the stupid Nirvana hat every day. You love Bruce Springsteen.
Mm-hmm.
Why? You've never...
I don't know where that came from either.
I remember like your first guitar was a Squire or Fender Telecaster too.
Yes.
After The Boss.
Yeah, I guess it kind of went along that way. But I was a big Pearl Jam fan, of course. And then who wasn't? Oh,
in our town, literally everyone was.
Yeah, we really took that over.
I guess.
Yeah, grunge. It's all us now. We were like 3 years later, 95.
You're being really nice at that.
Alice in Chains' second album is amazing.
Is that one Dirt? I think that one's Dirt.
Was that Dirt?
And then I think it was Jar of Flies, and then the one with the dog on the cover.
I like Jar of Flies, though. It had some nice tracks.
They all had some nice tracks, but, like, come on. He's singing about, like, alcoholism and heroin abuse, and we're literally 12 years old.
We didn't know any better.
Exactly.
We just liked the progressive rhythms.
All right. Anyways, you love Springsteen. Why?
I don't know. You know, actually, I take that back. I was a big... And here's, I think, the transition. This might be a jump, but let me see if I can get my head around this. My favorite Pearl Jam album was Versus.
Okay. It's very good.
Versus has a lot more storytelling on it, I think.
Elderly woman behind the counter in a small town.
The big hit, yeah. And when I started listening to those stories, I started really saying, this is something that I like a lot more.
Okay, I see that.
And then once I got that, then I heard the first, I think I heard Born to Run. I think my dad even had the album.
And,
you know, I was just paging through his stuff because when I was big into... Pearl Jam, of course, you're big into all the stuff. You're big into Crosby, Stills, Nash. You're testing Jimi Hendrix. You're testing The Doors. You know, it's natural adolescent progression.
Actually, I don't think you could say you're big into Crosby, Stills, Nash when you're testing the Hendrix and The Doors.
I was.
See, I think that also helps with it because that's...
And Jim Croce, too.
Yeah, that's not the normal 14-year-old in the suburbs, or 13, 12 years old in the suburbs music.
Jim Croce.
Come on, name one other Jim Croce fan we went to school with. Or, for Christ's sake, for Crosby, Stills, and Nash. In 7th grade? Come on.
And Young.
Well, that's the better era I'd go. Come on, don't knock Young. Young's the best part of that group.
Oh, I don't know. I like Stephen Stills a lot
more. I'm going to put on Live Rust after. Have you ever heard of Live Rust?
What's that?
It's the Neil Young double album that came out in the late 70s.
You know, I've never really gotten into his anthology, or if that's what it's called. I don't even know.
No, it's kind of like a... It's kind of like Decade, which was his greatest hits album of the
first
10 years.
I've seen Decade, yeah.
Which is great if you don't
know. Was that when he was with Crazy Horse, or did that come just prior to? Oh, he was with Crazy Horse.
Yeah, Crazy Horse is essentially his touring band.
Yeah, that's what I know.
Yeah, so like Decade is half, it's just all the hits, and some of those were just him, and some of them were with Crazy Horse. And that's what Live Rust is. It's two LP, four sides. Two of the sides are acoustic, two of the sides are loud. Crazy Horse stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I prefer.
See, I like a more laid back Neil Young.
You need the both, man. You need the heaven and the hell.
Why?
Really? Have you heard him loud? It's great.
Yes, I have heard him loud. Well, that's where
world.
Yeah, well, Pearl Jam and Neil Young contributed back. Keep on Rocking in the Free World.
Well, no, the Keep on Rocking in the Free World came out in like '89.
Yeah, but then
on Freedom.
But then Pearl Jam picked it up. When was that? Like on MTV. And
yeah,
I think
they
that
did.
Might be one of the things that got me moving into him too, because I saw how well he was loud and said, "Well, what else does he have?" And started hearing his soft stuff. And then some of the stories he was telling, I think that's what really got me into Springsteen, who just, I mean, some of his early stuff is just nonstop storytelling.
But to be fair, then, do you like Hank Williams a lot? You didn't like...
I do.
Okay.
I never really got into country early, though. Country was more of an acquired taste after a while.
What's your favorite Springsteen album? Like Nebraska or...
Nebraska. Oh, man, Nebraska is good.
Well, okay, I'll take it back.
Darkness on the Edge of Town.
That's a great album. Mm-hmm. But that's later era. Not later, but like 90s era, right? Is that early 90s?
Darkness 77.
Really? What am I thinking of? What's the one with the...
Tom Joad was...
Yeah, 90s. I'm thinking of Ghost of Tom Joad.
Which is also an excellent album.
Yeah. So you like Darkness on the Edge of Town is your favorite. Mm-hmm. What about the whole Born to Run stuff?
Born to Run was really good. I kind of got away from it because I think I played it too much.
Yeah.
And just like a good book, you read it once or mm-hmm. twice and you say, oh, I know it all.
That makes sense.
And you let it go and then you bring it back up and then the next thing you know, you go, wow.
Have you seen him?
I saw Springsteen once in 99.
Where was it at?
I think it was in United Center.
Wait, you saw him in 99? You saw him in high school?
Yeah.
So you saw him before like the huge 2002 Rising resurgence?
Yes, before that huge album came out. This is back when he, I think he reformed his band.
Yeah, he reformed the E Street.
Yeah.
There's was
some
it
pretty
good?
Incredible shows. Well, yeah, he was, I don't know, close to 60, and he was playing 3.5 hour shows.
Dude, he's not close. He was not close to 60 in 99.
Are you sure?
I mean, he 50? Might be 60 now.
Maybe he is 60 now.
Because, no, that can't be right.
Maybe it was his 50.
Because in 97, Bowie turned 60, and I know that he was a lot older. He was like 10 years older, and that was 2 years later. Isn't that a weird timeline I got figured out here?
No. If you can judge your life by David Bowie, then I can't match that for anything.
Well, I strive for the greatest. Anyways.
He is the greatest.
He's the greatest chameleon in rock and roll history.
What was he in? Oh, what was that movie?
Labyrinth?
God, how come I couldn't think of that word?
Was
all
that
I could think of all I could think of was a Minotaur for some reason.
Isn't there a Minotaur? I don't think there's a Minotaur in
There's
that.
No Minotaur in the movie.
Are you sure?
Is
I'm not.
There? Maybe
I don't
it's
know.
On the wall in the background.
It might be.
It might be an Easter egg that we need to go watch.
How could I describe this? The scene where he's turning the three like crystal balls in his hand.
Yeah.
What's the, I don't know what how to describe
that?
It. Yeah, that's all I can remember. That and spandex pants and giant Tina Turner hair. Which was awesome. And him making out with Jennifer Connelly at like 13.
What does that have to do with it?
That's Jennifer in the film.
Jennifer Connelly was 13 in that
yeah,
movie?
Yeah, she was like 13.
Wow, she's odd.
Though
now
I
she's in The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
Coming out soon.
Speaking of The Day the Earth Stood Still, you see who's in that? Don Draper's in that.
I know.
Yeah.
Go Don Draper.
For those of you that don't know, well,
Mad
they don't.
Men.
Everyone knows. We're on the
I
internet.
I love Mad Men. I watched 2 episodes and I love it.
Which season?
One.
Oh, yeah. One's great. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I didn't like that show until about episode 6, and then I became hooked. Does that make sense?
Really?
Yeah. It was too much story. Not storytelling. It was too much set building, which they needed to do.
Yeah.
And that was fine, but it's kind of it was like Dexter in the way I watched Dexter, which after 6 episodes, I wanted to see all the rest of them.
Do you think AMC is really trying to use the model that HBO had a couple years ago?
Yes, completely.
Are there HBO executives at AMC right now?
I'm sure. I don't know. We got to get in on that game.
I just see the exact same thing over and over again. One really good series, and
yeah.
then they build it up again.
Well, you know where the creator from Mad Men came from?
Where?
Sopranos. He was a Sopranos writer.
Really?
Which makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Cause oh, okay.
Did you like Sopranos?
I liked it. I never really watched it, though.
Oh, I loved it. That's one of those series where if you can, and now you can, watch the entire thing at once, man.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. My mom got me into that show.
Really?
Yeah, she loved it. I think she liked the idea of, we're Italian, she liked the idea of like the mob guy ruining like everyone's life. And control. She liked the take no shit attitude of the
I
Sopranos.
I like how the Italian woman also says it's the guy who ruins the life.
Kinda.
Mom keeps the family together. I like that.
Yeah, she was cool with Tony sleeping around because Tony got shit done.
That's right.
No one could argue that. I mean, he polluted entire towns.
Have a little mustachol.
Exactly. All right, so 15 minutes after I said we're done, I apologize for that. Question 33 from, let's recap here, from the Kids Book of Questions by Gregory Stock, PhD. If you and your friends were collecting money for a charity, and then your friends decided to steal what they were collecting and said they wouldn't be friends with you anymore unless you did it too, what would you do?
This is a no-brainer. I would punch them in the face
there
and take
go.
All their money.
And then what would you do with the money?
And then I would distribute it evenly over their graves.
So no, is the charity getting any money here?
Yeah, they'll get some of it.
All right. Well, you got to run for office one day. You can't ruin it. Thank you, Neil.
No problem.
I'm going to close it. We don't have to shake hands. People can't see.
We're shaking hands
we
right
We both moved to shake
now.
Hands. It was really weird.
Watch this.
We're going to close out with Daniel Knox. If you are in Chicago, Daniel Knox is playing, I want to say the first weekend or the second weekend of the month at the Old Town School of Folk Music, opening up for Kristen Hirsch, who is the former front lady of Throwing Muses. And if you live in London, Daniel Knox will be playing in London a few days after that with at a show with Patrick Wolf and Jarvis Cocker from Pulp and a lot of other great people. So thank you, Neil.
Thank you
for listening. This is Brandon Weatherby. You have been listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody, and here is Daniel Knox. When you let a fool leave his clever, the world seems smaller than ever.
Yeah.